You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Movie BS with Bear and Snyder.
Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you?
It's the kind of movie where the sword budget was higher than the pants budget.
You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier.
It's a cat and mouse game, okay? The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse has been raped. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now, guess who did all this?
The cat?
Yes.
Say that, friends. It's time for Movie BS. With Bear and Snyder.
Pitch me.
Pitch me.
Ginger Cole.
No, the pants are too wet and they're too shiny.
Tom Cruise is what I would like to say, Crazy Cruise.
I'm going to change the story to Robert Pattinson killed the clown.
Sir, as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a clue which movies to see. So tune in every week. That's right! I said tune in weekly.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder. Over there's my co-host, Jeff Bear.
Hey ho, everybody. I'm Jeff Bear. That's Eric D. Snyder. And here we are doing a show.
Episode number 333.
333.
That's half of the sign of the devil. You know who would make a lot out of that? Who could find some clues in that? I'll give you a hint. He used to have long hair, but it's gotten progressively shorter.
Thanks for the reminder.
Ha ha! I see what you did there.
There we go. Yes.
Professor Robert Langdon.
Mr. Langdon.
And in this new movie, this is the only new wide release this weekend. They're betting all their money's on Inferno.
There's not even like the, is there a surprise movie like Max Steel that you're going to tell me about later that it was like, what? That's not a movie. And then you're going to describe it.
No, it's the only wide release this weekend. There's a few, you know, limited release, but this is the only wide release.
Only one.
Just in time for Halloween. Inferno. It's part three of the Da Vinci Code thing.
Yeah.
So you know the other two, Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons.
That's right. And his hair keeps getting shorter and shorter, which is nice.
Now it's like a normal, now it's an acceptable hairstyle for Tom Hanks.
That's right.
And I guess people liked these movies because they made a lot of money. I looked at my reviews. I didn't like either of them. C plus was both of them. Mediocre, but harmless.
I would have to look it up, and you know that's not going to happen.
Sure.
So my gut is saying a 6 for the first, a 5 for the second, but I don't know.
This one is more of the same, but somehow less. And it's gotten dumber. It's getting...
Yes! I was going to say, as soon as you said more of the same, I was like, well, but...
It's more of the same, yet somehow less of it. It's as though they were responding... I don't know if these were criticisms, but it's as though there had been criticisms that the first two movies required you to be too smart to understand them. It's like they were responding to that, addressing that issue.
But at the same point... It's more of the same.
Right. Just
at the same time. Wait, we have a listener who corrected me, and I just remembered that as I said that. I'm working on it, listener. One listener who doesn't like that I say at the same point.
Well, one listener who said he didn't like
it. Who said he didn't, so there's a million out there.
I think that's the ratio.
Yeah. I'm just saying I'm working here.
We appreciate it. That's all anyone can ask.
Unlike Ron Howard filming action sequences, I'm trying my best.
You know, I think Ron Howard is trying his best. I think that's the thing.
I was going to say Tom Hanks and Ron Howard were like too good for this or just an ill fit for these things. And it should have always been in somebody else's hands and it should have always had a different star. I'm progressively just leaning toward the idea that it's like Ron Howard.
Just Ron Howard. Tom Hanks is too good for this. Ron Howard, this is about right.
Yeah.
This is when Robert Langdon wakes up in a hospital in Florence, Italy. And he's a little injured, and he's got a little bit of amnesia. So he doesn't know why people are trying to kill him. And yes, that's a nice, cheap, convenient way to create some mystery where the hero knows what's going on. He just can't remember. That's
all. And it's also amnesia with a twist, which is, oh, by the way, you're going to see visions.
See, so amnesia that, yeah, as his memory's coming back, he's going to have visions and hallucinations. And
They try to make that kind of connect. There's like, oh yeah, there was a loose flappy, almost scarf-like hood over a woman's face. So that'll kind of make sense later. And there's red flowing rivers. That'll kind of make sense. But like, it doesn't.
And when it does come up again later, you can be sure that there will be a flashback to the time that we heard it the first time of whatever the visual was and the audio every time.
And there's a good chance that if you don't understand where they are or what the historical importance is, don't worry. While they're running around, Tom Hanks will explain it to you.
Ron Howard here is following the show-and-tell method of storytelling, where they reiterate every clue over and over again. And it's my favorite is how when Langdon sees that there's writing on something, he says, "Look at that, there's writing." And then he reads the writing out loud while the movie shows us the writing. Basically, yeah. If you could follow the movie even if you were deaf or blind. Maybe even both.
Let's see. There's Ben Foster, who's kind of the bad guy.
He's the bad guy.
He starts the movie and at a TED Talk, pretty much, explaining that the world is overpopulated. And the smartest thing to do was to save the planet, cut the population in half.
Sure.
That's an interesting concept.
Well, it's based on the premise that the Earth is overpopulated, which isn't true.
Right. Well, but still, it's kind of fun to think about. And well, it would be kind of fun. And it would be kind of fun for a movie to do something with that idea.
Yes.
As opposed to, here's an argument, and then, is it Dr. Langdon? I don't want to get this right. Like,
He's probably a doctor. Professor
right.
Langdon.
Also, Professor Langdon is a staunch believer that half the population shouldn't die.
He is anti-killing half the world.
Do they argue about it? Do they bicker about it? What is there to argue about?
Between killing half the world and not killing half the world?
Here's the problem, though. The concept of it is just repeated. That's all that's happening. We know the concept immediately.
Right.
And then there's some people who are like, this must be done. And then, no, don't you realize it's wrong to do it? Mm-hmm. And then 20 minutes, 30 minutes go by, and then somebody else feels the same way, or they have to try to say it in a different way. And it's like, you're not getting anywhere. And the juicy part of all this is, all right, kill half the population and show me that movie. See what happens. I'm kind of curious about that.
I agree. If this were an entirely different movie with a completely separate
right.
story, that would be better. I agree. But we can't really blame the movie for not being a totally different movie. So this virus is going to be released, going to kill half the world, and so Robert Langdon has to solve puzzles to find it, as usual. There's fewer puzzles this time, and I really feel like he's gotten stupider. Because, like, one time he's looking at a medieval painting on which someone has drawn several small letters, and he has to think about it for a long time before he realizes they're probably an anagram for something.
Well, now here's the thing. First of all, he only noticed one letter.
Right, and then
his sidekick, Felicity Jones, who's a genius doctor.
She's the doctor who happened to be in the ER when he came into the hospital, and she is suspiciously helpful.
But anyway, so she
notices the other letters, yeah.
There's like eight other letters, actually. So maybe we should all piece these together. I don't remember how many. I don't even remember the word, whatever.
But then it's a long time before it occurs to him, the obvious thing, which is they must be an anagram. The thing
completely.
That as soon as we saw letters, we said, oh, I bet those are an anagram. I bet those letters spell something.
So we have all of that, and we have that, and then we have the World Health Organization, and maybe there's some good ones, and maybe there's some bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, you're just kind of like, hang on, let me focus for a second here. Who's the bad ones? Who do I care about? Who am I worried about? I can't really tell.
They think that this virus, if it does exist, maybe in addition to being used to kill everybody, someone might like sell it to a government. And then there's the guy who the Middle Eastern fella. Irfan Khan is the actor, and he works for the Ben Foster character in some capacity that I was never completely clear on, except he came to regret it. I know that. He came to regret it.
Here's what it is.
Hmm.
You know how you want stuff done, and you're a billionaire,
mm-hmm.
But then there's laws?
Right.
This guy created a company that was just like, hey, we'll do whatever you want because you're giving us money. No questions asked, blah, blah, blah. But then occasionally it might be a good idea to ask some questions with some billionaires that might be crazy and want to kill half the world.
Except I feel like if you're starting out in the business of doing secret things for billionaires, that you have given up the right to have qualms about the specific things they ask you to do.
Well, that's why there was a scene in the movie where it's like, are you sure you want to do this, sir? This is not the usual protocol.
Hmm.
He's like, yeah, I think maybe we should do it in this. By the way, that's also the movie I would see. I would see this guy with his knife and his quick killing and his sarcastic talking and his very flippant attitude about death and all of that sort of stuff. That was the only character that I found compelling in the least in this film.
I also like the part where, as they're going around looking at clues, finding, they have to run around into museums. You know how it works. They look at various museums, and they have to look behind paintings and stuff. And Robert Langdon realizes that he's been feeling ill, and he dimly remembers being injected with something. And he mentions this to Sienna, and he says, "What if?" And she says, "What if what? What if I got injected with the virus, you dolt? What else? What do you mean? What? What do you mean? What if what? Moron."
And again, as the way it's laid out, like, he misses this, like, scaly, itchy thing that's going on in his back. He doesn't notice it, but we're stuck noticing it, which to me is just like, ugh, now it's a delay until he notices it. Because again, this is our lead character. Like, it's not like he's going to fall over 20 minutes later and die because he didn't notice the scales on his back.
Right.
Or the scratchy skin. Also, very convenient in these movies when there's they got to get away. They got to get away. Thank goodness there's a protest on the streets, so then they can blend in. I hate that as a device. Also, very convenient in the, like, people are chasing them, and Robert knows all of the secret doors.
Of the museum, sure.
Yes. And then everybody else, like World Health Organization, people are like, okay, you have all the exits closed. I think it happened twice in this movie where it's like, well, I mean, you know, it's a really old building. I don't know if we have all the exits
closed. We didn't close the secret exits, but nobody knows about those. I mean,
don't worry about that.
Come on.
It all just feels terribly lazy and redundant compared to the first two films. The weakness of Jack Reacher is still in my brain. Mm-hmm. And this was just kind of like, yeah, you're giving me a milder sequel for some reason.
It's the Da Vinci Code. I don't think it's the Da Vinci Code TV series. It's more like three or four times a year, there's a Da Vinci Code TV movie. Like on a Saturday or a Sunday night. It's an event like three or four times a year.
Yeah.
One thing I do like that we've gotten now in technology, and we can look forward to this in the future in movies, is no longer do people have to hotwire cars to steal them. Now you can just hop into a car to go. It wasn't car to go specifically. That wasn't the brand, but that was how Sienna made their escape at one point. I like that. That can be a new thing. We don't have to steal cars anymore.
Right.
Just use car sharing.
No more hotwiring.
No, we
nobody
don't need to
needs
do that.
To hotwire anymore.
They can never explain how someone knows how to hotwire. They always say, how do you know how to hotwire a car? And they'll say, oh, my uncle was a criminal. Like they learned by osmosis or something.
I was just going to say my uncle was a mechanic.
Or whatever, yeah.
Criminal person.
I don't think they teach mechanics how to hotwire cars.
I don't know, though. I've never had a mechanics class. Maybe they do. Maybe that's all they do.
My dad was a mechanic when I was a kid. I'll ask him if he knows how to hotwire a car. But he might have learned from when he was a criminal.
But yeah, not only that, like, aren't you stuck, like, thinking about, well, whose car did they just take? Did that person really need that car?
We feel bad for them. I would rather see that movie, the movie about the person whose car got stolen by some crazy professor going on a scavenger hunt around Florence.
He walks out carrying groceries.
No, he walks out carrying his pregnant wife to go to the hospital to deliver their baby.
Mm.
Now what's going to happen?
He's going to seek revenge.
Mamma mia!
What? He's Italian?
We're in Florence.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. You're right.
So if you want to, like, half pay attention to a movie and still understand it because they'll keep repeating everything, it's good for that. I wonder if the book was the same way. I assume the book's only available in large print, by the way.
My whole thing is, though, you don't – you know how some people are like, oh, these movies, and plus you're learning about, you know, great art and history and everything. I don't retain that part. That's not how my brain works. I don't hold on to the information all that well.
Sure.
So it not even that part is enjoyable for me. There was a moment where I was like, oh, Tom Hanks is better in this one. I like this Langdon better. There was a moment in the beginning where that was happening. And then there was a moment where Felicity Jones was like a good sidekick for him. I liked her intelligence and like, yeah, she was a nerdy kid that just absorbed information. I liked that for a little bit, but I swear 20, 25 minutes and I was just like, all right, what else you got?
I was done with her fast because whether you've seen the previous movies or not, if you've seen any movie before, Like, you know that she's not just the ER doctor who happened to be there. Like, it's the way that she reacts to everything that happens. Clearly, there is more going on here than just that. And so I was just impatient waiting for her to for that all to come out. One thing that I do like about these is I always learn about word origins. And this time I learned where the word quarantine comes from because they told us in the movie, and I looked it up, and it's true. The word means 40 days, and it had to do with a period during the Black Plague, when in Italy they would make ships stay in port for 40 days to make sure nobody on board had the disease. And that's where quarantine comes from. See, you learned something. I learned something anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't listening. Ben Foster, they employed him, but they didn't utilize him. No. So that's always a shame.
That's a shame.
And is this the end of the books? I don't even know. Is there a million of these books?
I didn't know there were three. Inferno, I give it a C.
4 out of 10.
And that's all for this week. Like we said, they're putting all their money on Inferno.
Yeah.
Not even a new horror movie out. But there was one last week. And I saw it.
Tell me all about it, baby.
Ouija, Origin of Evil. And here's the surprise. It's good.
That is a surprise because it's a sequel to a movie that wasn't good.
And I didn't see Ouija a couple years ago, but I take the word of everyone that it was bad.
Yeah.
And this is a prequel, actually. But it's different writer-director. It's Mike Flanagan, who directed Hush earlier this year.
Oh,
at South
okay.
by Southwest. And did Oculus a couple years ago about the Haunted Mirror. Remember that?
I don't think I saw Oculus.
That was another one that was better than it had any right to be.
Okay.
And this seems to be his thing of taking very familiar scenarios and finding some new creativity in it.
It's weird that somebody actually employs him to do that, considering most of the time sequels are just schlock for horror specifically.
Especially, yeah, a horror prequel is like the best excuse to just phone it in.
Is this him? Like, it's all about then like making the board like in like ancient times? That's
no,
pretty cool.
No, alas. No. Well, ancient times, it's 1967 in LA, and there's a woman, a young widow named Alice, she's a medium, a fake medium, who runs out of her home, runs this business where people come and want to contact their dead loved ones. And she has two daughters, a teenager and a 9-year-old, and they help her, you know, be con artists, shake the table and move the character and that kind of thing.
Are they holding hands in the circle too, or are they just like
they're hidden.
They're non-existent.
Yeah,
there
you go.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah, and the mom, Alice, she believes she's doing good because she's helping people find closure and it's, you know, not hurting anything and whatever. But then the teenage daughter, she suggests adding a Ouija board to the act. Like maybe use some magnets to move the thing around and give the customers a thrill.
Wait, where did they get it? Where did they get the Ouija board?
Just at a store. Just regular Ouija board.
Oh.
Yeah.
So nothing wrong. Business thrives.
Exactly.
Maybe she opens up a few more franchises?
Well, because what happens, the youngest daughter, Doris, the 9-year-old, she turns out to have prodigy-level abilities with the Ouija board, and she summons actual spirits and doesn't even have to move the planchette. It's called a planchette.
It's called a planchette?
Yeah. Doesn't even have to move that around with her hands. It moves by itself.
Hang on. Is a planchette used in any other scenario besides a Ouija board? And by the way, anytime I say Ouija, I'd rather just say Wheezy.
Wheezy?
As in George, sure. I really would. It's just too close for me.
A planchette, that's French for little plank, is a small, usually heart-shaped, flat piece of wood equipped with two-wheeled casters and a pencil-holding aperture used to facilitate automatic writing. So it's used, yeah, for seances and this sort of thing.
Awesome.
So not just Ouija boards, but yeah, supernatural stuff. Anyway, and one of the spirits that young Doris contacts might be her dead father.
Oh.
Yeah, and so...
Oh, wait. Or it might not.
You never know with these things.
Nah, you don't.
But yes, then business does start booming, but there are downsides because now Doris is kind of being possessed by these spirits and she kind of channels them in a very spooky manner. And the kids go to a Catholic school. The priest there, he is concerned for a variety of reasons. stuff goes wrong. And the fun part, he's got a lot of different premises here. You've got a haunted house, kind of. You have creepy kids, demonic possession, spirits. There's lots of different, you know, good old standbys. And Mike Flanagan, the director and writer, he finds new ways to use them. He's got a sharp eye. He's good at making it look nice. And he's keeping with the retro vibe. They got the old style Universal logo at the beginning, but then there's also cigarette burns where the real changes would be.
Oh, but.
But it's digital. But it, yeah. No, they're totally fake. Yeah. And he uses the kind of cameras and techniques they would have used 45 years ago to kind of make it feel, you know, early 1970s.
All right. So what's better? Is vibe better than jump scares, or is jump scares better than vibe?
Well, vibe is better. And there's not really he doesn't do much with the jump scares either.
Oh,
a couple, but nothing egregious.
Yeah.
Nothing makes you feel cheated.
Right.
Mostly he's all about suspense and tension. And if you pay attention, there'll be some creepy things in the background and just good use of the creepy kids and the spooky house and all that. And it's not gore. Is there no gore or sex or nastiness? It's very PG-13. And also I think that was part of his challenge to do like the old style movie, something that you would have seen in the early 70s.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have been all gory. And yeah, it's good and fun and spooky. Good time. I gave it a B+. Ouija,
whoa.
Origin of Evil. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That means maybe one day I should actually see it, because then it could be BS approved.
Mm-hmm. That's what every movie dreams of being.
Oh, can you imagine? Little thing on the DVD case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said DVD instead of Blu-ray. Oh man.
And this is a prequel, but it works fine as a standalone story. I looked up afterward to see how it's connected. There's nothing in it that seemed like an obvious connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you saw the other one, you'll see the connections. If you didn't, don't worry about it. And I won't say what it is, because it might be kind of spoilery.
But wait, but you didn't notice the connection?
No, it just has to do with the particular characters in it.
I gotcha.
But to say which ones overlap.
Say no more.
Right.
I get you.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
So there. Anyway, a nice, well, surprise for Halloween. Ooh, Halloween.
My kid's going to be a Lego.
For Halloween? Or just as the result of a gypsy's curse?
Ouija boards. No, he's going to be a Lego. And this was a surprise. There's no such thing as a Lego costume.
No?
No. So we made it. It's fine. And there we go.
Speaking of Halloween, I was thinking it'd be fun, and a couple of people, when we asked for feedback, a couple of people said that they liked this segment we haven't done in a while, where we go back in time. Jeff and Eric's Excellent Adventure. We'll go back to Halloween weekend in some previous year and look at the movies that came out then. So how do we do this? How do we choose a random year? Oh,
we go
I know.
To Box Office Mojo and the random number generator.
That'll tell us, yeah. So I'll look up a random number between 1984 and 2006.
I accept.
Right.
Yes, I accept that.
All right. 1995. Halloween 1995.
1995. Halloween.
This would have been right before Toy Story came out, because remember that was at Thanksgiving.
Wow.
October 7th through 29th, 1995. Oh, powder. Powder.
You just said October 7th.
27th.
Yes, okay.
Powder.
Powder, I saw it on DVD, and I was struck. It emotionally hit me for a moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I went and saw that over at the Dollar Theater, Movies 8 in Provo. Went with a coworker of mine. I was working the graveyard shift at Denny's at that time. Just back from my LDS mission, I was.
Oh, 95. Let's see. Where was I? Was I a freshman? No, I was sophomore. It was my sophomore year at Iowa.
All right.
So I was still in the dorms.
Sure.
Overstayed my welcome in the dorms. That was kind of sad.
Yeah, you're really only supposed to do that, be in the dorms your first year, right?
If you're cool.
I mean, really?
If you're cool.
Oh, if you're cool, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Vampire in Brooklyn. Did I watch that with you? Did we watch that together, like, a few years ago?
No.
No?
It's Eddie Murphy, right?
Yeah.
No.
All right. Oh, we watched Coming to America.
Nobody in the history of the world has ever gotten those two movies mixed up.
Because he comes...
Even though they still star Eddie Murphy.
Because he comes to America and he comes to New York, doesn't he?
Wait, did you mention Get Shorty was number one?
Oh, no.
I just skipped it.
Powder was the new one. Get Shorty was the number one film that weekend, but it had come out the week before.
Nonetheless.
I didn't see that till a few years later.
Really? Did it have an impact on you? I thought it was pretty cool. Like, obviously, this is after the super cool in the sense of Pulp Fiction. But, yeah. I thought this was a good one.
I remember people talking about how John Travolta was on a roll now. But no, I didn't see Get Shorty actually until the sequel came out, like 8 years later.
But did you see Get Shorty first?
Yeah, I saw it like the night before I went to the screening of Be Cool.
So were you able to realize, oh, well, Be Cool is bad compared to this, really bad? Mm-hmm. Or was it like, man, this is all the same, it all blends together?
No, it was not as good.
Copycat. Let me see if I can remember this. Is this Sigourney Weaver?
Yes.
Okay, Sigourney Weaver is an agoraphobe? Is that what you call them? People that can't leave the house?
Yes.
Awesome.
That is what you call them. I don't know if she is one. Yes, she is.
All right. And Harry Connick Jr. I can't remember if he started to be the villain, but he's definitely the villain.
Yes, he's a bad guy.
That's all. I don't know. There has to be a third person in there.
It's as the result of the attack that she becomes agoraphobic, according to Wikipedia. I never saw this movie. Seven was in theaters.
The number five movie was Now and Then. I saw Now and Then in the theater. And Now and Then had... Okay, so it was you know, mainly women in the theater.
Yes.
It's like Demi Moore, Melanie Griffith, and then...
They were in the theater?
Yeah. And then the kid versions of themselves, too.
Right.
That's the movie. Coming of age. Rosie O'Donnell's in it as well.
Right, right.
There is a somewhat cheap scare in a graveyard in this movie. And it is top 10 like scares that audiences reacted to in my life.
And this is not a scary movie.
It's not a scary movie, but this one moment worked really well on this theater, and everyone like did the freak out and then the laugh about freaking out. And I remember that moment quite well. It was powerful, even though, you know, nothing about the movie was all that memorable. That moment really stood out for me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Seven was in theaters. I think I've mentioned this before. Seven is the first movie that I saw in the theaters after getting home from my LDS mission.
Ow.
When my friend Jess and I went and saw Seven in the theaters. And it was a dark reintroduction to the world of movies.
I showed Seven to Dylan when he was about 3 weeks old at like 5 a.m.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Yep. We'll find out.
You haven't noticed?
No, not yet. I haven't noticed signs.
Okay. Three Wishes. I don't know what Three Wishes is, but Patrick Swayze, isn't it?
I was just going to say, that's what I know. And Mary Steen, what is her name? Steenburgen?
Mary Steenburgen. Yeah.
Is it Steenburgen?
Steen.
Steen. I was going to say it sounded like I was making it up.
What is this movie about? I never saw Three Wishes, described as a drama fantasy film.
Yeah, I think maybe Patrick Swayze was dead in the movie and he granted, I don't know how many wishes, but like it was something to do with granting wishes.
Maybe three wishes would be the specific number.
Nobody knows.
How to Make an American Quilt, I've never seen. Assassins with Antonio Banderas and Sylvester Stallone. I saw that in the theater.
That only made, wow. I saw that in the theater too, and Sharon Stone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sharon Stone, still very effective for me in 1995. I think she was was Sliver in 1995 too? Sliver?
No,
that was probably 93.
Before. Yeah, yeah.
Probably 93. Basic Instinct was 92.
Yes, I think so.
Nice.
Hey, do you know who wrote Assassins?
No, Sylvester Stallone.
No.
Oh, then no, I have no idea.
I'll give you a hint. They're siblings, right. Pair of siblings, and they go by different names now.
Wachowski?
Wachowski.
Wachowski, 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 yeah.
Yeah, the Wachowskis. Lily and Lana Wachowski wrote it.
Ooh, in limited release, did you see these two? Mighty Aphrodite and Leaving Las Vegas. I think I saw Leaving Las Vegas. I think I saw it in the theater.
I didn't see it until later. Wait, I'm just catching up with myself here that Box Office Mojo has the writers of Assassins listed as Lily and Lana, even though at the time they were Andy and Larry. It's not accurate.
It isn't accurate. That's kind of like saying Caitlyn Jenner won the Golden 70s.
Yeah, no, Bruce Jenner and she's Caitlin now, but at the time she anyway.
She is.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, wait. Hmm. What is you can pick any movie. What is your favorite movie on this entire list?
Entire list of movies that were in theaters the Halloween weekend 1995.
Right. Halloween weekend, October 27th to 29th, 1995. You guys can't see the whole list, but we're going to pick our favorites right now of this entire thing.
Well, you can see the whole list if you go to Box Office Mojo. Yeah.
Right. You got to do that work, though, people. It's easy.
Right, there's but it's easy to do.
One A and one B for me.
I mean, Seven is a great movie. That would be up there for me. The Usual Suspects. It's pretty good.
Usual Suspects and Braveheart.
Oh, yeah, Braveheart's on there. Oh, this was its 23rd weekend. Get out of there, Braveheart.
Oh, wait. No, that and not only that, what am I talking about? Of course, Seven. Yeah, I already forgot about that. Good gosh.
Strange Days, I think the first couple of weeks when I got back, when I got home from the mission before I went back up to BYU, I went to the movies a lot because I remember seeing Assassins and Seven and Strange Days all in Lake Elsinore.
Mm.
I think all with the same friend. That's all we did, we go to the movies, I guess. How didn't we? Why didn't we see How to Make an American Quilt? I've still never seen it. Next time I see Jess, we'll have to watch that. Make up for last time.
Winona Ryder, I believe.
Probably.
I think it is.
Sounds like a movie she'd be in.
I think the poster is her just like draped in a quilt.
Yes, it is.
Nice. Can you guys tell that I worked at a video store for a little bit? Is that something that might be obvious?
And that's how you play Jeff and Eric's Excellent Adventure. We traveled back in time to 1995. And then the new DVDs this week. There's a couple of good options.
Yes, there is.
Captain Fantastic was a movie we both liked.
Yes, really liked this movie. Really good acting. I think there was like one kid that I didn't care for, but otherwise, for a pile of kids, some good acting out of this.
It's about Viggo Mortensen and a pile of kids that live off the grid, and they have to go into society. And he's a parent who follows his own program.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a film that you didn't need to see on the big screen. This is easily watchable in the comfort of your own couch, like 90% of the films now.
And then a movie with the person who's not Viggo Mortensen, but I sometimes think is Mads Mikkelsen.
When I was looking at the list, I was like, oh, wow, we got a lot of Viggo this week. Nope. And I was like, wait, no, we don't.
With Mads Mikkelsen, Men and Chicken, which we saw at Fantastic Fest last year. Danish comedy.
It's goofy. It's occasionally cringeworthy. And there's a lot of people out here that might try watching it. And when I say try, it means they're just like, no, this isn't for me. It's weird.
It is weird. I thought it was pretty funny.
I liked it.
It's about It's a guy. He finds out. He and his brother find out that they have their father had many other children too. So they go to see this part of the family they didn't know they had.
Yes, and it turns out they are the oddest of oddballs. But they don't really know it.
Right.
That they're as odd as
they live on a kooky island or something.
Yeah, and it is Mads uglies himself up. He gives himself a hair lift for this one.
And he's such a jerk. Like, he gets in a fight with a kid or something.
There are some moments. If you give yourself over to this movie, you're really going to like a lot of parts of it. Men and Chicken. But it is not for everybody. Be warned.
Lights Out was not good.
No. Conceptually, there's some moments there, but like, don't make Lights Out a part of your Halloween festivities. Find a better horror movie.
There are many better horror ones.
Oh, there's tons.
So many better ones.
I always throw out The Orphanage if you haven't seen The Orphanage.
There you go, for example. And then Nerve, which Nerve is not a good movie, but it'd be a good one to watch on DVD for a dollar.
And it started off.
It does start off okay.
Yeah. The problem is that third act with Nerve. Like, I had a good time with it until.
The whole problem with Nerve is that it's these kids doing these increasingly dangerous, stupid stunts, and they don't have any reason to be doing them. There's no compelling factor in the story to make them keep doing it, and I had a hard time sympathizing with them. But it's got what's her name and what's his name? Emma Roberts and a Franco? Is there a Franco in there somewhere?
There's a Dave.
Dave Franco, yeah. It's not bad.
It's not awful.
A lot of people liked it more than we did.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I know. There's no accounting for taste.
My nephew declared it was like the worst thing he had ever seen, but then it was just like, you haven't seen enough.
How do you know? Can you name a movie that he's seen that was worse? Well, then that must be the worst movie he's ever seen. I proved it with logic.
Dang it.
Couple items of housekeeping before we wrap up the show. First of all, we, and by we I mean I, made an error last week saying that the first Jack Reacher movie was rated R. I would have sworn it was rated R.
I totally went along with it. It felt like it was. We probably, in our review, we probably talked about how it should have been R. Because I remember being uncomfortable with the violence.
And I had even just rewatched it a couple weeks ago, and watching it felt like, oh, yeah, this seems, you know, it's a light R, but it seemed about right. I wonder if what we were remembering is that when it was announced that it was PG-13, fans of the book said, it's going to be terrible if it's not rated R. Like, it's not going to be violent and awful enough. I wonder if that's what was stuck in my head. Anyway, someone pointed out that we were wrong. So what we said about the sequel being PG-13, whereas the first one was R, ignore that. Cut that. We'll cut that out of the show. We'll cut that out of last week's show because it's not true. Don't ask how. We just will. And then also, we were trying to find our youngest listener, and we found someone who was, I think, 14 or 15.
Yeah,
I think. But then we got a message from a listener, Charlie. He is 14 years old and has been listening to the show frequently for the past few years. So as far as we know, Charlie at 14 is our youngest listener.
Come on, young people.
Mm-hmm. If you're younger than that, we want to hear from you.
Have you noticed we haven't heard from old people yet?
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. I wonder if our oldest listener is like in their 50s, and they assume that they can't possibly be the oldest one. So we gotta say
somebody.
Let's say 60. If you're over 60.
No, let's just say somebody can claim it right now. Like if you're 25 and you want to decide you're the oldest listener. Send it in, and somebody's got to beat you. Otherwise, yes, you're the oldest listener.
All right. All right, yeah. If you think you're the oldest listener, let us know. And I guess I should say, I guess we're saying, if you think that you couldn't possibly be the oldest one, you might be wrong.
You might be.
You might be crazy. But it just might be a lunatic we're looking for.
I was thinking of song lyrics, too. There's another one. Oh, well. by the way, Jordan... is going to Thailand, and I was talking about the Thailand theater.
Who's Jordan?
And, you know, Jordan, one of our listeners.
Oh, Jordan.
And he's going to Thailand. So I think I blogged like my entire Thailand vacation. I'm going to track that down. I'm going to send it to you, Jordan, because like greatest vacation of my life. There's a lot of things you should totally do. And oh my gosh, if you run into a man named Pepsi, it would like make my life. I hope he's doing well.
I remember you talking about Pepsi.
Love Pepsi.
And when in Thailand, be sure to take advantage of the very cheap sex change operations that they do there. Is it not cheap anymore?
No, I wouldn't take advantage of it. I guess I wouldn't.
No?
I mean, if you're on a budget.
Yeah. You're in a budget and you need a sex change operation. When in Rome, take the plane to Thailand and then get the operation. Anyway. That's stupid. Inferno is not very good.
It's not. Ugh. Eric liked it more than me.
I just disliked it less. And that's the only movie. Oh, Ouija, Origin of Evil. Forgot I'd mentioned that. Yeah, it's good. I was pleasantly surprised at the fun spook house that is.
I wonder if I'll ever see it. Do you think I'll ever see it? I don't think I'll ever see it.
If someone sends you a screener of it, you might watch it. Or if it shows up on Netflix or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Men and Chicken out on DVD, also on Amazon Prime. If you got the Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free, Men and Chicken.
Oh, I wish I could tell you that I watched Love and Friendship on Amazon Prime.
I saw it's on there.
Watched 5 minutes of it, and my wife was like, nope, can't do it tonight. No, it's not happening. And then we started a show on Amazon called Catastrophe. I really like it. Really like it.
That's the one I watched the first couple episodes of that, and it was funny.
We watched the first two episodes. There's only 12. It's two seasons, but it's only six episodes each season.
That is,
so they like should take another day or two and then be done with it.
Yeah. No, that's one of, I think, like 50 shows that's supposed to be good that maybe I'll watch sometime. But
there's so many shows that are supposed to be good.
Right. Just you just got to let it go. Just let it go.
But if people aren't watching Atlanta, I can't let that go.
Yeah, sorry.
If they have access to the show, and they're not watching it, then that's painful.
What's it about?
It's about a guy who manages his cousin, who is an up-and-coming rapper. They all live in Atlanta, and it's a
Donald Glover is the manager.
Yeah, that's right. And he's managing Paperboy, and it's fantastic. It is like everything about it.
Is it funny?
It's very funny. It's very, very intelligent, and it feels like it's giving me glimpses that have never been properly portrayed on television before.
Glimpses of what?
Of life, lifestyles, African American life, everything. Atlanta.
You haven't seen enough Tyler Perry movies. You want to know about Atlanta and the black community? Watch some Tyler Perry movies. I'm going to see that Boo Hal Medea thing. I wanted to see it in time for the show.
Don't you do it.
I didn't. Anyway, that's the end of the show.
All right.
Happy Halloween. We hope you don't die. Until next week, for Movie BS with Baron Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Fair.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.